So that little movie clip, or I guess it's a TV clip, that little piece of audio was from the TV show SWAT. And joining us now is one of the writers for that show, as well as the player. And I think we first got to know VJ when he was a writer for the TV show Justified. And
that's right.
Again, he joins us now on the Zoom.
VJ.
Hey, guys. Very excited. Very excited.
So we're looking at him. You get to see Mino's hot back.
Yes, I've heard about it, and I finally get to see it. It's very exciting.
It's very hot.
And you are joining us, I would guess, from the world of glitter, Hollywood?
I am. I'm in Sherman Oaks. I'm in Los Angeles. I'm at the SWAT office today so that my kids don't run in and interrupt this or something. When I have Zoom meetings, I try to go to the abandoned SWAT office and use it.
Okay, very nice. So you are a former P1. I don't know if you're always a P1, but you grew up here and you just packed your bags. You went off to Hollywood to try to make it, and then you did, I think, right? Would you say?
I did. I would say so, although I have to always remind myself, like, oh, yeah, I've been doing this for a long time. I guess I might even qualify as, like, an expert or something on this, because I always feel like, oh, I'm not an expert yet. I'm not, like, I'm not Sean Ryan, and I'm not yet. But I am kind of an expert on this.
Yeah, you went out, and so what was your – just for a quick recap, because I don't think you've been on the station – I don't know, for a little while at least. Just to recap, where'd you go to high school? That kind of thing. Where'd you grow up?
Oh, I grew up right around the corner from UT Dallas. If I'd gone to school, I would have been the Plano School District, but I was homeschooled, which I think is why. And Jake always mentions how he calls me a flag football legend, which is very kind of you. But I think that's where my interest in that game came from, because I didn't get to play organized sports in high school or anything because I was homeschooled. And so when I got to college, it was like, oh, intramurals? What are intramurals? Oh, wait, there's football? Oh, and I don't get a concussion? This is amazing. Right. So, but yeah, I was homeschooled, went to UT Dallas, and moved out to LA in, when was it, 2008? Yeah, I guess that's right. Yeah, in 2008. And I should mention, I worked for IBM up in Coppell for 6 years before I moved out here. And, started as an assistant on several shows, Falling Skies, The Beast with Patrick Swayze, where I got him a latte. RIP, great guy. yes, that's right. On to Justified. I was an assistant season one, and then I wrote on Justified the rest of the show.
Well, that's really I'm sorry. So homeschooled and you went to college very close to home. But then just broke off and went to Hollywood. That doesn't add up almost. Like, I wonder about, you know, what kind of social skills does somebody have if they are homeschooled?
I may have mentioned this before, because I think you brought this up before, but I always tell people, you know, I went to freshman in college. I went to Quad C for a little while, and I sat in the class. I was like, oh, this is just like on TV. It's like, yeah, it's just like I've seen on TV. You're in a classroom. There's a teacher. Yeah, I get it.
That was your first experience with classroom education. How old were you when you moved out there?
Oh, when I moved out to L.A., I guess I was 28. Yeah, I was 28. So kind of late start to start a new career. But I think that's true for a lot of people in entertainment or industries and stuff. And I actually think I learned a lot from having worked in the business world for a little while, having to, like, break out of my comfort zone and try to sell things to people. And it's like, oh, I can talk to strangers. You know, it's okay. I can do this, which you kind of need those kind of networking skills.
So was that always in your, like, did you go to college thinking I would love to move to Hollywood. I would love to be a writer, but parents said, let's do something real. Like, get a real job.
Well, I think I was definitely, I mean, my parents paid for my undergraduate education, largely. I had a tiny scholarship. So, you know, I think they were right to try and get a general business degree, which is more all-purpose than trying to get a film degree, which is not all-purpose and doesn't even get you a job in the film industry. You're just learning about the thing, but no one cares what your degree is in the entertainment industry. So I think that was helpful. And then, I was always interested in writing specifically. Like, I would always write these short stories. And then I worked at a Family Christian Stores for many years when I was in high school and college. And I would bring these short stories I wrote to my coworkers as if they would want to read my stupid short stories. But to me, it was like, oh, of course they will. I enjoyed writing them. They'll love to read my mystery stories. So I was always interested in doing something involving writing for a living. So I like, it's amazing that I actually get to do it, and that now I can force my stories not just on a select group of coworkers, but millions of Americans have to watch my stories. It's amazing.
Did you have something lined up before? And by the way, this is VJ Boyd, writer and producer on shows like Justified. That's where we've started getting ticket references worked into actual television shows that millions of people watch. We'll play some more of those here over the next 30, 45 minutes or so. But did you have something lined up before you actually took the plunge to move?
No, I didn't. But I the thing that finally I felt like, oh, I can do this were two things. A mentor that I had in grad school, because I was going to grad school then at UT Dallas at night while I was working at IBM, because I was like, I don't want to be in sales. I want to do something where I have more time to write. So I was thinking stupidly that, oh, I'll teach and then I'll have more time to write because I can write over the summers, which is insane because teachers are super busy. But I was going to grad school to do that. And I had a teacher there, Tony Daniel, who's a science fiction novelist. And he encouraged me. He said, well, if you want to try to write movies or TV, you just need to move out there. And I think you're good enough to do it. And so it was that. And also I'd had a really good year at IBM where I was actually able to save a chunk of money. And so I was like, oh, I feel okay about moving out and trying a new career because I have this savings, which, by the way, with California prices went away very quickly.
Yeah. So you're able to just afford housing at least. And you quickly gave us your bio on your first job, and you got Patrick Swayze a latte, and that's enviable for sure. But how do you get that first job? What's that process? Is there a help wanted paper?
Generally it's through people, you know, it's through a cousin of a friend of a friend. It's that kind of a thing, right? Giving you some entry level position. It's really hard to do it outside of that. I honestly was a very, very lucky in that what happened with me is I moved out right after the writer's strike. And so a lot of people who'd been assistants, because you make nothing as an assistant. And so a lot of people had to leave town, and there wasn't a big pool of people to hire as assistants as there used to be. And so I was able to just cold call shows that were starting up again now that the strike was over. And I got hold of this guy, Stephen Pearl, who I still work with on some things sometimes. I was like, hey, are you guys looking for assistants on this show, The Beast? Can I send you my resume? And he was like, well, we open tomorrow. We open the office. Come in and interview. And so it was really just that was like the 20th place I cold called. So it wasn't the first call. But I was lucky in my timing, you know.
Were you starstruck in the past?
You mean like on shows, meetings? So, yeah, I mean, I think Patrick Swayze was a big thing. That was like the first star that I came into contact with on that first show. But I guess that kind of goes away at a certain point, and it's like, oh, these are just coworkers. They just happen to be coworkers that I've seen on TV, you know, and it becomes this weird thing of, oh, yeah, that's right. This person's famous after a while. But yeah, at first, a little bit.
All right. This is VJ Boyd. He's our famous friend because he's a big time writer in Hollywood, and he is joining us for this whole hour. So we're going to go through some of his greatest hits that we consider your greatest hits.
Can I play one for you?
I love them. I love them. They are my greatest. I was so excited when someone finally noticed.
I'm going to play one right now. And I have a lot of questions about whether any of these have ever been turned away or if anybody's ever actually asked you, like, what is this? And I think this one might have actually ended up in a Sepinwall article. From Justified.
What the hell is that? Him? He's a loyal customer.
Who the hell are you?
I'll give you a gift. The anus is on you to take care of it. Now just give it away to any old face happens along.
The anus?
Yeah. You speak English, don't you?
Unbelievable,
the
dude.
The T-Box E-Break ended up on FX. The anus.
That's probably the best one. I think everyone says that's the best one. I think it is the best one. And that was, I knew that Dewey Crow would be a character who could say that. And none of my scripts had ever had Dewey in them. And so I'd never had a chance to work it in. And this was a script actually that Chris Provenzano wrote most of. And we were really running behind. And he was like, hey, can you write this scene? And I was like, oh, this is amazing. I can work this in. And I know Chris will keep it because he'll think this is hilarious. He won't know what it's from. And it totally stayed. I was so excited when that stayed. I was like, this people will notice for sure. They have to notice this.
It was unbelievable. And there's a lot more. So we'll get into that after the next segment. And VJ, you're sticking around for the whole hour. So you get to comment on the 1:30 news next.
Here's Jake with the 1:30 news.
Thank you, Blake. Here's Mino's Hotback.
Roar and Sons Brewing Company.
And with us here in the hang zone on the 1:30 news, it's our buddy VJ Boyd. He of TV Writing and Jub Jub's Fun Factory. We'll play some more of his fun audio in the next segment. VJ, is this an opportunity that you've always just dreamt of, sitting in on the 1:30 news?
I'm very excited. I mean, sitting in on Why Today Doesn't Suck the one time I was in studio was amazing and also very enlightening as to the way that it was done. Anyway, I could go very inside baseball on the chemistry you guys have during that segment. But this is also exciting. This is number two or two and a half something.
It's right there with Swayze and the coffee.
No, but it's still cool.
So, somebody put on Twitter a picture of that Jub Jub's Fun Factory, you know, the sign that led into Jub Jub's Fun Factory.
Yeah, from SWAT.
And was asking, do you get to keep those props? Do you have any of that stuff?
I don't have any of the Jub Jub stuff. I might be able to get it still. I don't think they would have thrown it away yet. Normally it's the end of the season that we break down this stuff. I have a lot of the stuff from the player, the Regonk shirt for the band Regonk, and then I have like a fake tiger shirt and that kind of stuff. So I have those things. I don't have any of this stuff yet, but I need to get on that.
I wish to bid on the Fun Factory.
I'll get on that.
So this was released by Bloomberg today, Dan. Kanye West is reportedly worth, take a guess,
$500 million.
According to this report released by Bloomberg this morning, Kanye West is worth $6.5 billion.
So I severely underbid.
Now, the bulk of his wealth is from the apparel. The Yeezys and his partnership with Adidas.
Really?
Yeah.
He gets more from that than he does from killing it?
Yeah. Has a clothing line with Gap as well. $6.5 billion, dude. Like, I don't know about you, VJ. I'm not really sure what your musical tastes are, but I still remember the first time I heard College Dropout. Like, I remember the truck I was in with the buddies I was with, and the first time I heard it, within 2 minutes, I was like, I've never heard anything like this in
change
my
life.
I mean, I'm not even being hyperbolic. It was like,
no, he's incredible.
This is the most unique. You know, I was like probably 17 at the time.
Did the Yeezy thing emerge after Kim? Like, did her circle help him get into this circle?
That I think checks out
because they're very good at making money on, you know, with
everything.
Clothing and
Jay.
Well, no, but.
But yes, actually.
Well, I mean, that led to
right.
them getting into their own clothing lines and whatever. They're all pretty good at it, right? All those Kardashians.
Yeah. That's why whenever...
Well, I was going to say, a friend of mine was in studio with Kanye West, and he was wearing a camo smock. And my friend was like, oh, well, this must be a new fashion thing. Like, this is going to be the next thing. There's Yeezys, and now there's going to be smocks. Everyone's going to wear smocks. And then a couple minutes later, his barber walks in because he's just getting a haircut in the studio.
I wouldn't have ruled it out. This Bloomberg report says Kanye's catalog is worth $110 million. So
that's
a drop in the bucket of his overall net worth. Crazy.
That's insane.
I'm happy for him.
Yeah, he seems to be doing great.
Dan, do you know the story? Have we talked on the show before about the serial stowaway, Marilyn Hartman? Do you know this woman's story? Have you heard of her, VJ?
I have not.
So this is a woman, and she was actually arrested earlier this week, Tuesday, at O'Hare in Chicago. She is the woman who over 22 times has been arrested sneaking into, like, the underbelly of airplanes.
So how many times has she successfully done it?
You've got to figure there's a ton of them.
So
she's 69 years old, too, by the way. Like, this is an older woman.
Well, that's very nice, but this is like the Joe Buck addicted to hair plugs? She's addicted to doing it?
I mean, look, she was arrested on Tuesday, 2 weeks after she was in court for another arrest for the same thing.
The Nate Newton.
They won't get me this time.
They'll never be looking at the underbelly of this plane now because they think I'm scared.
And she's not even trying to go anywhere specific. It's just to get in the plane. It doesn't sound like it has anything to do with getting anywhere.
It doesn't. Now, I do believe she's homeless, but she's, I think, homeless because she's been arrested 22 times and doesn't seem interested in a home, more seems interested in trying to get into the plane. But 22 times, man. And she was wearing an ankle monitor for this one, by the way.
So they could easily find
her.
They
already had. They had you.
Well, so clearly, like many homeless, it's a mental health issue.
Yeah, probably so, but to a alarming degree, right? Like,
yeah.
This is different than just, hey, I've got a little issue. This is, I'm hiding on planes every 6 months.
Yeah, I'm really glad that I've been exposed to all these cancer-causing radiation going through these scanners, but apparently you can just get into an airport and climb into the underbelly of a plane when you're homeless with no resources at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, is she going through... Yeah, how do you get to the... Is there a big fence around the entirety of DFW Airport, or could you
just
walk?
Yeah, but it's not that big of a fence. It's not that big of a fence.
Yeah.
But it surrounds the whole thing? You're just saying it's easy to jump? Okay.
Seems pretty dangerous.
How do you know?
I think about these things. As a writer, I think about these things. When I'm landing at airports, I think about, well, what if there was a heist at this airport? What kind of fencing do they have around here? You know, things like that.
Oh.
Well, I certainly do not have the sack to try what this woman has tried. Like, I almost feel like there's a point where if you've been this successful at something that doesn't really harm anybody, you kind of just say fair play to you and let her...
Well, you're saying she's been arrested 22 times. That does not sound like successful. Unless you say she's done it
and
without being caught 300 times.
And that
How many trips did she actually complete?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I don't know that. But, I mean, she usually gets arrested when the plane lands.
Like,
right?
You're,
like, so she's been
you're
on
just highlighting
many
the three-pointer that was missed. Well, how many has he made? Well, this little sports tie-in.
You did bring it back to sports. Two people in Houston, Tuesday night, broke into a museum. Okay? This is an insane, insane story. Maybe this will end up in TV world for VJ.
Rip from the headlines.
Exactly. So they break into a museum of fine arts in River Oaks, which I believe, incidentally, is the neighborhood that the Deshaun Watson attorney parked his tank in, Tony Busby. So officers are called. Two people run out of the building into a motorboat, which was waiting along the banks of Buffalo Bayou, a little river down there, which goes through the city and runs adjacent to the museum. And they got away on the boat.
Was it set there as a getaway?
I believe so, yeah.
Wow, all right.
Dive team was called to provide pursuit.
Respect, right?
Ultimately, they jumped out of the boat into a nearby drainage tunnel and escaped into the belly of the city. No arrests have been made. That's pretty badass.
And what'd they get away with?
I don't... So the article says that actually nothing, nobody was hurt and nothing was, you know, damaged or stolen.
They were no way. They stole something that wasn't supposed to be there, you know, which is why they knew they could get away with it. So there was something there that nobody was supposed to know was there, and that's what they got away with.
See?
But publicly, they're just saying nothing, yeah. They don't set up, that makes sense. They don't set up this boat getaway and know how to dive into the city's sewer system to get away or whatever without...
getting the Da Vinci Code.
Interesting.
That sounds like a Grand Theft Auto mission.
It does. It really does. Like, I've never really had a desire to run from the police. But if I did, boat is the move.
Like that boat in somewhere like Houston. I don't know how many police boats there are on that river. I mean, maybe not a boat in Baltimore or something. McNulty might come get you.
He wasn't interested once he was on the boat. He was collecting a check, drinking on the job.
Yeah, because how long would it take them to call a police boat to meet them there in Houston?
Yeah, you're probably pretty far behind at that point. But, I mean, they do have a hel- you know, they've got a helicopter that they can...
That's why you go in the tunnel. That's why you go in the tunnel.
Go in the tunnel. Then you go down to one star.
And you said... Yeah.
On GTA.
Hand spray.
You said they escaped into the belly of the city. That sounds cool.
It does. Probably pretty gross, but that's part of escape, right?
I think these guys are much cooler than the serial stowaway girl.
Both pretty cool.
The payout of one is significantly higher than the other.
We're only guessing, based on VJ's thoughts.
Although
they actually got away with something quite valuable.
There would be the problem for me. There are several, like driving a boat. But I'm not sure that I could flip stolen art for full value.
No, that's a tough one. I want to go back to driving a boat. You don't think you can drive a boat? Come on, man. It's way easier than driving a car.
So you're telling me that, like, right now you could just hop into a nice 30-foot Baja and rip it up, no problem?
Yes.
Really?
I'm saying my dad had a boat and I was a little kid and he'd be like, here, drive. Then he'd go grab a beer and walk around and he would not have done that with the car.
You don't think that's just an issue of a little less scrutiny? Like, there's nobody paying attention on the boat.
And there's not a lot of traffic right around you. If there was a bunch of boats around, I'm sure Dad would not have allowed me. But I'm just saying, in general, it's easier to drive a boat. Don't have fear, Jake.
You guys think you could just hop in a boat and nail that? No problem? Am I crazy here?
Docking it would be tough, but if you're just out on open water going straight, that's the easy part.
Yeah, and then you leave it in the open water and dive into the sewer or whatever they did. What do you think, VJ?
Something would happen where I would not be able to start it or something. I'm not good with mechanical devices. It'd be the stick shift version of a boat or something.
Right.
And yeah, I just wouldn't be able to get it to move.
Okay, yeah. So you've proclaimed that you...
You just said driving a boat.
This is no problem for you. And then now we're back at you saying, yeah, I guess starting it.
Well, I mean...
That feels like an integral part of can you drive boat.
Well, you do like the terrorist. You take the class on driving a boat, but you just learn up to starting it. And you don't have to worry about the docking it part, because you're going to leave it out in the middle of the water.
We're docking.
That's right.
This does appear to be a pretty brilliant scheme, though, because the Houston police that were quoted in this story said that once they got into the tunnels trying to provide chase on foot, their radios no longer worked. They went dark.
I love this. This is amazing. And this was in Houston.
Yeah.
This is awesome.
Tuesday night. It does have a lot of the makings of something that you would not believe if it was on television. Like, you're stealing art, there's a boat getaway, and you ended up in a drainage system. And you got away.
But I do agree with you. No idea where to sell stolen art. Absolutely no idea. Where do you even begin? You need to go on Reddit. Like, what would one do? Go on Quora, see if anyone's answered Quora, the question. What would one do with stolen art? Just out of curiosity, for a friend asking.
So it's worth 500 grand. You have this piece of art.
At best,
what do you do?
I'm getting 250 bucks for it. 50 grand, I could probably find a way to get 250 bucks out of that. But that's,
you kind of have to already have a buyer, I guess. And also, it has to have sentimental value to the person because it's not like they can display it. It's very weird. I mean, people do steal art. I don't know who wants it.
This is why we need this is the case for the NFT, Dan. Can't steal it. Verifiable. Authenticated. Blockchain.
I don't know. And they couldn't sink the Titanic. But, you know.
All right, that's going to do it for the 130 News Yay! Today. Coming up next, one more segment with our buddy VJ Boyd, including more audio. With Dan, with Jake, today with no Julie, but with Jacob Dedamore, Blake, and Mino, and our buddy VJ Boyd. We're thinking last week, hey, we need to get our buddy VJ Boyd on, catch up, because he writes for television and currently is writing for CBS's SWAT. This is kind of I think we just, Dan and I have a bunch of questions about how your entire profession works. So can you write for multiple shows at once? Is that a dumb question? Like, are you contracted for this 6-month period, we get all your stuff?
You really can't write for multiple shows at once, but because of streaming and cable and the way that works, oftentimes it'll look like you are, because they're like, for instance, my brother is also a TV writer, and he worked for me on the show Lincoln Rhyme, Hunt for the Bone Collector, which I had created and ran, and I hired him on that. And his episode that he wrote for Lincoln Rhyme aired, I believe, before his episode of Reprisal, which he'd written on over a year before, just because they wrote them all, then they went and shot them all, and then they didn't air on Hulu until after we'd aired, if I'm remembering the order. But that kind of thing happens all the time. So it looks like, oh, this person's everywhere, but really they did that writing 2 or 3 years ago sometimes. But in my case, I was on SWAT for a couple of seasons, then I went and did Lincoln Rhyme, and now I'm back doing SWAT again. So with broadcast, normally it's very clear the progression of what you're working on.
Okay, one more dumb guy question. So if you're not the main showrunner, and I know you've produced some of these shows as well, but let's say that, how many episodes are in a season of SWAT normally?
Normally it's 22. This year we did 18 because of COVID, but normally it's 22 episodes.
Okay, so there's one person in charge that has an idea of, this is the arc of this season, here's 20 episodes. But they're written by sometimes 4, 5, 6 different people. How do you get the germ of the idea of where, in the arc, your specific episode is going to be so that you know what you're working with? Like, how much do they tell you create from this template, or how much do they not say that, I suppose?
Well, the way that almost all shows work, and there are exceptions, but the way that almost all shows work is the biggest part of the job isn't the actual sitting and typing. It's that every day we come in here, actually into the room I'm in right now, the SWAT writer's room, and we spend 8 to 10 hours in here making up what the arc is going to be over those 22 episodes and where everything's going to happen and what all the episodes are going to be about. Then we drill down and we're like, okay, we're going to spend a week deciding exactly what's going to happen in episode 3. And then once we've decided all that, then it's like, okay, now VJ, you go write the script for that, right? So it's just narrowing it down. So we all are on the same page because we all came up with it together.
How pliable is that?
Like flexible?
Do things ever change as the season goes on and you decide, you didn't really get to where you thought you were going by?
Oh, all the time. Six? Yeah, all the time that happens. And like COVID is a huge example, because we had written 7 episodes that we weren't going to start shooting until last August. We had written them by May. And at that point, we were like, oh, this COVID thing, this is going to last a while. This is going to affect how we shoot. Do we want to address it in the show? We had to make all those decisions. So we went back and rewrote everything we'd written to fit that. And then also one of our actors got injured, not on set, but they were not then going to be able to be in the first 11 episodes. So then we had to go rewrite those seven to take that actor out of them. So like there, things change all the time and you have to be flexible. Yeah.
How much do you think, because I've seen some people say, like with regard to something you just mentioned, covering COVID in entertainment, what's your opinion on how much that's actually going to happen? Whether it's in shows, movies, whether people will have just too much fatigue of dealing with it, how much should the content reflect regular life? I mean, I could probably kind of go either way on this, but I'm also leaning towards I don't ever want to see a TV show about COVID.
Well, it's interesting because This Is Us. They act as if their characters are living through COVID and they talk about COVID all the time, at least in the first half of this season. And I feel like the response has been fatigue, like what you're talking about, like, well, we already lived this. Why do we want to see it on screen? Which is interesting. I would not have predicted that. My wife predicted that. And Sean Ryan, my boss on SWAT, predicted that as well, because we had long discussions about how much we want to represent it on screen. And he decided, you know what, we're going to do one episode where we kind of cover that it exists. When necessary, we'll have people in masks. But he did not want to do the thing where it's like, well, everyone's in masks except our stars, which is like, well, that looks weird. And also then it's saying, oh, if you're a star, you don't have to wear a mask. It's all weird. So he was like, we'll address it once. And then people aren't going to want to see it on TV. And he was totally right.
All right, let's play a little bit of this audio. So we were made aware of this most recent round of VJ Boyd ticket-related writing in the show SWAT, which is why we ended up having you on today. Here's a couple of those.
After an hour going through mugshots, these are the guys we saw with Trent Mitchell yesterday.
Nestor and Adrian Hitzkiss. Never heard of them.
Bulletproof Boys, a.k.a. Badass Incorporated, a.k.a. Brothers Grimm, 1M and Grimm.
There's just no way that there is another radio station in this country whose overnight board op was written into a network TV show with Trey Mitchell.
Might even be the stash house where they're keeping the pills. Then we put that bastard Trey Mitchell in cuffs.
We might not even need to trace shipping labels. Trey Mitchell's part owner of an indoor playground called Jub Jub's Fun Factory.
There's the cherry on the pie. So,
Jub Jub's Fun Factory.
Where does that start in your head, and how does that get to the get to airing on TV eventually? When did you first think, I got to get Jub Jub in there somehow?
Well, I should also mention that Nestor and Adrian Hitzkiss, that was Norman and Adolf Hitzkiss. And I was like, I wonder if I can do this. And then Sean was like, Adolf Hitzkiss? Sounds a lot like Adolf Hitler. We're not going to do that. And so I had to change it to Adrian. And I picked Nestor, just nasty Nestor. I was like, well, it's kind of anyway. But with Jub Jubs, what's funny is Jub Jubs was one where it was very spur of the moment, because I always want to do some kind. I'm like, where has SWAT not raided? Because they never raid every episode. It's like, what's an interesting place they can go? And it's like, okay, an indoor play place. That's a place we can shoot because it's a big open space and they can raid it. It's just using for money laundering. There's not going to be kids in there. I was like, what do I call it? And I was like, Jub Jubs. I don't know. It just came to me. I like that it should be called Jub Jubs. And I didn't think they'd let me keep it because it sounds so ridiculous. And they did. And everyone thought it. Everyone was like, that's so funny. How'd you come up with that? But I didn't tell them it was an Easter egg. I never tell the people I work with when something's an Easter egg, because some people think that's too cute. So I let them find out after the fact.
So, like, when they do find out, has anybody reacted negatively, or is it generally like, well, the episode was good, so I don't care if you name this after a morning show host in Dallas you grew up listening to?
I know nobody seems to care. I don't think they care. If they do, I don't care that they care. No one in power cares. The one I had to fight for the most was What About Eggs back in Justified days, because it is a really weird thing to say, and it was very hard to work it into a sentence. But Garrett Dillahunt's character, Ty Walker, in Justified was sort of an eccentric character. And so I was like, okay, I think I can work it in. And the guy I was writing with, Dave Andron, who created and runs Snowfall now, he was like, I don't know if I understand why he's saying this. I think we can just shorten this. I'm like, please, can you just leave it? I have a reason. Please just let me leave this. And he was like, okay, whatever. And so I was proud of that one because I had to kind of fight for it.
Well, solid tease. Let's listen to that one from Justified.
The police.
Or perhaps you've heard rumors and innuendo elsewhere. It's a small town. I'm sure tongues are wagging.
I'm sorry. Who are you again?
Ty Walker. I'm a fully licensed operative. Tiger Hawk Security Services. Now, you know conversations with the police are not confidential, right? There's no law that says you can't share with me what they shared with you. What about eggs?
Eggs.
Well, maybe you're hungry. I get like that on an empty stomach. I can't formulate a thought in my head.
I mean, it just makes no sense.
No, I don't know.
Like, it's the biggest left turn.
What about eggs?
Is that Timothy Oliphant?
No, that was Dillahunt. Dillahunt. Oh. He's the bad guy, yeah.
So let's play a couple more here. I mean, we have a million of these now. It's almost hard to pare it down. Let's get a little Dan Love in here. I believe this is from The Player.
I could do if I decided that you were worth just a little more effort.
Wait, please. Look, I've thought about this, and if someone were to, like, pull out my toenails or something, I would just talk, okay? I mean, I love Alex, but I got a mom and a dad.
Yes. Mary and Dan McDowell. Lovely people by all appearances.
Oh, God, please.
So that's almost like a layup for you. I mean, if it's just a name.
Oh, yeah, because I hate coming up with names. I hate coming up with names. So I just use names of people I know almost exclusively. So I was like, yeah, I'll use ticket names, see if anybody notices.
Yeah, I was always wondering, do writers just open the phone book and randomly grab a page and put their finger on it?
Some do, some don't. Some feel like names are super important and have to have thematic resonance. I know the Breaking Bad writers felt that way. I do not. I think a name is a name.
This is probably, outside of working the anus in there, this is probably the one that I was the most impressed with. This is from The Player, and this just floored me.
He beat us there. If he gets to Jake, the best is lost.
Try calling Jake to warn him, right?
No answer.
Keep trying. Get the number to his dad at the safe house. Maybe he'll have better luck.
Given their relationship, I wouldn't hold out too much hope.
Yeah, it's his son. We gotta let him try. Hey, Cassandra, when does the concert end?
It's an all-day festival, but based on Jake's music streaming activities, they'll see the band Ragonk, whose set will be finished in a little over an hour.
Suarez will be waiting.
Okay, so, again, let's try to unpack the fact that we used to have something called the ticker tease. A one-year Cowboy linebacker named Rolando McClain was injured. TC wanted to offer an update on the status of that injury. And somewhere down the line, a network TV show is working his stumble over the name Rolando McClain into a script. The band Ragonk.
Ragonk.
But it was so easy because it's a metal band. It's a metal concert. It's like Ragonk. It sounds like it could easily be like. And I'm in that scene when Philip Winchester's searching for young Jake Kemp, who was who hates his father. He's searching for him in there, and I get run into by Philip Winchester wearing my Ragonk shirt. So yeah,
incredible.
That's why you still own that.
All right, let's play.
Well, that was my actual ticket branded Ragonk shirt with TC's beautiful face and flowing hair. So,
okay,
that's in the episode.
Yes, I'm there getting run into.
All right, we got to play this one more time.
What the hell is that? Him?
He's a loyal customer.
Who the hell are you? I'll give you a gift. The anus is on you to take care of it. Now just give it away to any old face happens along.
The anus?
Yeah. You speak English, don't you?
And the editor of a local golf magazine.
Who misunderstood the word onus.
One day.
It's just so hard to follow.
Replayed so many times on the ticket, and the musers for sure started it all. And
incredible.
It ends up on a big time TV show. Unbelievable.
VJ, do you have the desire to do movies as well, or do you?
Oh, I mean that would be great. My writing movies would be awesome. It's a different process. It's just a different process. The writers don't have as much control. It's very much a director's medium. Movies and also it's like just because I'm writing for TV, that doesn't give me as much in as it would seem. to writing movies. You know, it works the other way, though. If you are a big time movie writer, you can, it kind of makes it easier to transition to TV. It just doesn't necessarily work the other way for whatever reason. But writing movies is so tough now because there's less movies being released every year. You know, and of course, like with the theaters and COVID and everything, who knows what it's going to go down to now. But yeah, I would love to.
So it almost seems like some of your stuff was self-taught, too. I was just wondering, I just recently read a screenwriting book in this last year by William Goldman.
Oh, was it Adventures in the Screen Trade?
Yeah.
His famous one? Yeah, I mean, that's a great fun, I mean, it's a very old, but it's a great fun book because Goldman's such a great writer and that it tells a lot about storytelling and everything. Like the format is slightly different now, but it's close enough.
And I wondered if you had anything like that that you helped propel you into this career.
Oh, I checked out every book at the library, Renner Frankfurt Library there in Dallas. I checked out every book on writing in general for fiction and screenwriting as well, and then bought a bunch also then in college and such. And then also just like teachers that I had and workshopping with other people and not being sensitive about them giving me notes, because you get better from people criticizing your stuff. You just have to know which criticisms are valid and you learn that. So it was like just with the help of my friends and a lot of reading. And now, especially with Zoom, you can take those UCLA extension courses from anywhere. I mean, there's so many resources now.
It's so cool. What a cool career that you are in the midst of crafting for yourself, because certainly it's not full. We must ask you for one thing, VJ Boyd.
Okay.
Do you have any idea what that is?
Is it a redo of the liner? Because the one I did before was Bob and Dan. But now I guess it's the Hang Zone. I haven't heard any of the new liners. So are we saying Jake and Dan, or are we saying the Hang Zone?
Neither. Dan and Jake. It was contractually dictated as such.
There's already a famous country duo named Jake and Dan.
Yeah.
So we couldn't get that domain name.
But also, are we saying 96.7 these days, or are we still saying 1310?
Well, we're just saying The Ticket, because who knows what the future will hold.
Many avenues. Okay.
So, yeah, you know what to do. Identify yourself, and you want to say that you don't listen.
Yes. This is VJ Boyd, writer for television, and I never listen to Dan and Jake on The Ticket.
Look at that.
One take. We're happy for you, man. Thanks for giving us time today.
That was as nervous as I've been. What if I screwed that up? Lose all my P1 cred. Thank you guys so much for having me on. It's always fun.
Thank you for Jub Jub's Fun Factory. We'll talk again soon. 2:15, this is The Ticket.